negotiations, but rather an act of dictation. Araghchi emphasized that Tehran views indirect channels as a better means of ensuring effective and fruitful negotiations. The minister noted that if the other party demonstrates genuine will, an agreement will be in reach. He also dismissed as baseless reports suggesting that the initial indirect negotiations might eventually turn into direct talks. The comments came after U.S. President Donald Trump claimed that Tehran and Washington would hold direct talks on Iran's nuclear program. Meanwhile, China has reacted to the announcement.
Under the current situation, the relevant parties involved in the Iran nuclear issue should move together, strengthen dialogue and interaction, and prevent an escalation of the situation. As the country that unilaterally withdrew from the comprehensive agreement on the Iran nuclear issue and caused the current situation, the U.S. should demonstrate political sincerity, uphold the spirit of mutual respect, participate in dialogue and consultation, and at the same time stop its wrong practice of threats of force and exerting maximum pressure.
He added that China will continue to maintain communications with all relevant parties, actively promoting peace and dialogue and pushing for a diplomatic solution. Meanwhile, Moscow has expressed support for the upcoming talks between the U.S. and Iran. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov emphasized that such discussions could help de-escalate tensions. Also, an anonymous EU spokesperson has welcomed the talks, stressing that any progress towards a diplomatic solution is a positive step. In Moscow, Iran, Russia, and China have commenced trilateral talks on Tehran's nuclear program behind closed doors. Hosted by the Russian Ministry of Foreign Affairs, discussions by expert delegations aim to establish a roadmap for future cooperation among the three countries. Iran's Foreign Ministry spokesman Ismail Maria had earlier announced ongoing consultations with China, Russia, and European countries regarding Iran's nuclear program. He said the Moscow event will delve into various aspects of the Iranian nuclear program, the JCPOA, and UN Resolution 2231. On March the 14th, 2025, senior officials from Iran, Russia, and China held discussions in Beijing addressing similar issues. The Russian State Duma has ratified a treaty on strategic partnership with Iran. Russian President Vladimir Putin had submitted the document to the lower house of parliament in March. Now, the treaty was signed during the Iranian president's visit to Moscow in January. The document provides the legal framework for the long-term development of relations between Moscow and Tehran. Now, the treaty significantly strengthens relations between the two allies. Iran's President Masoud Pezeshkian has said Tehran is adamant to further expand cooperation with BRICS member states, especially China and Russia. In 2021, Iran also signed a comprehensive cooperation treaty with China. The three countries have gotten closer in defiance of U.S. unilateral sanctions. Moving now to Gaza, where the Israeli regime presses ahead with its genocidal onslaught, killing more civilians in a devastated Palestinian territory. At least nine more Palestinians, including four children, were killed in Israeli attacks on residential homes in Deir al-Bala, central Gaza. Other parts of the Palestinian territory, including Rafah, were also targeted by multiple air and artillery attacks, causing dozens of fatalities. Also, a journalist succumbed to his wounds sustained in Monday's attack on a camp of media workers in the southern city of Khan Yunis. The attack left another journalist killed and a number of others wounded. The total death toll since October of 2023 now stands at over 50,800 people, with more than 115,680 others injured. Well, we're going to take a closer look at the latest in Gaza and the West Bank. I'd like to welcome to this part of the program out of Deir al-Bala, Moti Abu Musabeh, and out of Ramallah, Nada Hamed. Thank you both for being with us. Well, let's start in Gaza. And Moti, again, another violent day there. Please fill us in on the latest situations taking place today.
Yes, unfortunately, the brutal and deadly Israeli strikes and raids are still undertaken in full swing. We are talking about different parts, of Gaza, but still decimated by the Israeli warplanes. I'm going to start with the fish attacks that took place a short while ago in Gaza City after the Israeli warplanes resumed their brutal airstrikes targeting Az-Zaytun. In addition to Ash-Shajaya and Bahut, they were targeted heavily by the Israeli occupation forces. We are talking about at least four successive airstrikes targeted in different parts of those neighborhoods. In addition to that, as you know, the Israeli artillery shelling is still maintained brutally and cruelly against the eastern parts of Az-Zaytun neighborhood, in addition to the Ash-Shajaya neighborhood as well, because we are talking about an ongoing military operation and offensive that is still underway till this moment, targeting the eastern parts of Ash-Shajaya neighborhood. And even when it comes to the southern parts of Gaza, as you know, the Israeli warplanes are still decimating and ravaging different parts of Rafah City. And in addition to that, the Israeli artillery shelling is still ongoing, targeting multiple areas of the city, basically the western parts of the city. Different parts are still smoldering in light of those successive air strikes, coupled with the extensive artillery shelling maintained against every corner of Rafah City. Several plumes of smoke are still billowing in the sky of Rafah City, and the current situation is beyond belief in terms of those constant attacks targeting the Palestinian people, and the catastrophic humanitarian conditions are still befalling Palestinian people there. What is happening in Rafah is a real materialization and embodiment of the Israeli brutality targeting the Palestinian civilians there, because we are talking about hundreds of the Palestinian people are still stranded and besieged in the western part of, as you know, Rafah City. And the Israeli occupation forces on the ground are still pressing ahead with the genocidal ground offensive targeting, as you know, the northern and the western parts of the city, whereas they are still expanding the Mirage corridor after it was taken control by the Israeli occupation forces. This is why they are still detonating more residential squares and buildings there till this moment. As we speak right now, we can hear the deafening Israeli explosions booming and from Rafah City, and this reflects how catastrophic and tragic the situation is for the Palestinian people. And as you know, what the Israeli occupation forces are aiming to achieve on the ground by taking control of Mirage corridor there is just to completely and utterly isolate Rafah City and separate the entire city from other parts of Gaza Strip. This means clearly that the Palestinian people are no longer able to reach or leave Rafah City because of those constant and incessant Israeli airstrikes, attacks, artillery shelling, the gunfire maintained by the Israeli occupation forces. And let me say clearly that 90% of the residential buildings and infrastructure, as you know, facilities were completely destroyed and blown up by the Israeli occupation forces. Those buildings that were not destroyed by the Israeli successive airstrikes and air raids, the Israeli forces systematically are trying to detonate and wiping them out of the map. According to the latest images of the satellites, we are talking about staggering scales of destruction and devastation unfolding in Rafah City, reflecting how the situation looks like in that city. Let me remind you that what is happening right now in Rafah City is absolutely resembling the genocidal ground offensive that targeted the northern part of Gaza Strip. So after the Israeli occupation forces finished their job of, as you know, destroying the entire section of the northern part of Gaza Strip, now they are moving to the southern parts of Gaza Strip. And in the central area of Gaza Strip, they are still, as you know, they are still vowing to carry out more ground offensives here targeting the central area of Gaza Strip. They are still instigating against the central area of Gaza Strip. This is why they are still, as you know, intensifying the artillery shelling targeting the northern part of Al-Nusrat refugee camp in addition to the eastern part of Al-Burj refugee camp, like what happened over the past couple of hours. So all in all, we can see clearly that the current situation for the Palestinian people is hyper-hazardous and perilous. A lot of those ongoing deadly attacks that are still ongoing, and they have never stopped for a while. And you know, regarding the humanitarian conditions, the Palestinian people are still suffering severely from the absence of the basic humanitarian necessities and supplies in the shadow of the ongoing embargo and the blockade imposed by the Israeli occupation forces, having the Gaza crossings completely shut down and closed for more than 38 consecutive days. And we understand clearly what does it mean for the Palestinian people to be deprived completely of having any access to those basic humanitarian essentials.
Yeah, absolutely devastating. Stay with me, Moti. I'm across over to Ramallah and talk to Naga. Of course, Naga, the oppression may not be on the scale of Gaza, but it is extremely bad also in the West Bank. Fill us in about the latest that's taking place there, please.
Yes, Marzia. Well, the pain is actually divided between the West Bank and Gaza, as both of those Palestinian territories are under aggression. the form of aggression may vary from here to Gaza, but the oppressor is one, and the pain is definitely one. Over here in the West Bank, two Palestinians were announced killed by the IOF today. The first was the Palestinian, the 30-year-old Amana Ibrahim Yaqub, a Palestinian female, was shot in near the area of Haris, near the village of Haris, in the provenance of Salfit, where the IOF claimed that Amana tried to throw stones upon Israeli settlers and IOF forces that were in place, and immediately was shot by IOF forces, and her body was detained. Amana, a mother of three and a Palestinian advocate, was shot today in Haris, and also in the area, the village of Wadi Fuqin, to the south of Beit Lahem, a Palestinian elderly actually got a heart attack while watching his home being demolished by Israeli bulldozers in the area since the hours of the morning. A massacre of demolition over here in the West Bank was going on. A very extremely alerting rate of demolishing Palestinian homes inside the West Bank. In Beit Lahia over here in Ramallah, many homes were demolished, many buildings, agricultural buildings were demolished by the IOF since the hours of the morning, and unnotified. The people were not notified whatsoever about this demolishing that took place in Beit Lahia. In Jenin, specifically in the area of Brooklyn, another Palestinian homes that were demolished. And now we are seeing in Jenin, the level of demolishing is expanding outside of Jenin refugee camp. The IOF always says, and the pretense is always ready, that they are working inside Jenin refugee camp. But now we are seeing demolishing operations outside Jenin, the Jenin refugee camp, actually in Brooklyn today. In Nablus also, a demolishing campaign took place inside the city, demolishing two homes of Palestinians. Also in the area of Arab al-Blihat in near Ariha, another attack and demolishing took place in the area of of Masafer Yatta, to the south of Al Khalil. Another demolishing campaign took place in the province, in the area of occupied Al Quds in Anata and in Aram. Another demolishing campaign. So that today it was actually highlighted by the number of demolishing Palestinian homes and Palestinian facilities that took place inside the West Bank. Going back to the situation on the field, another Palestinian was critically injured in Jenin after being shot in the head inside Jenin city, a Palestinian young man actually, and then was hospitalized by Palestinians, was taken to the hospital after being shot by the IOF forces. Another attack took place in the University of Abu Dis. 30 Palestinian students were actually injured due to a vicious attack by the IOF forces and the Israeli police forces, attacked the campus of Al-Quds University, Abu Dis, near occupied Al-Quds. More than 22 injuries were directly to a poisonous gas, and they were treated on the field, and another injuries with rubber-covered bullets and burns due to the direct shooting of the tear gas bombs towards those students. So as you are seeing, there's a variety of attacks going on over here in the West Bank. In addition to all of these attacks, this settler violence is relentless on the ground. The settlers are attacking more Palestinian villages, taking more lands, and of course expanding in the illegal outposts over here in the West Bank, and performing the settlements, performing the ruler settlements, and expanding their authorities on the Palestinian territories.
All right. Well, thank you so much for that update from both of our correspondents, Moti in Gaza, Naga in Ramallah. We appreciate you being with us. Moving on to other news now this hour, China and the European Union have promised retaliation against the U.S. trade war following President Donald Trump's threat of additional tariffs.
China will take the necessary measures to firmly safeguard its legitimate and lawful rights and interests if the U.S. side ignores the interests of the two countries in the international community and insists on fighting a tariff war or a trade war. China will fight to the end.
Two things are happening. The first is our proposed response to the U.S. steel and aluminium tariffs. That is being voted on by member states tomorrow. If they give us a mandate to move forward with those countermeasures, I expect that will happen early next week. Also early next week, as the second phase of our response to U.S. tariffs, this time on cars and reciprocal tariffs, we will basically be presenting our plan in the same way as we did with steel and aluminium.
Well, this after Trump's threat of an additional 50% tariff on Chinese imports. Trump also rejected the EU's zero-for-zero tariff offer by demanding that the bloc buy $350 billion worth of energy from Washington to get tariff relief. Trump's sweeping tariffs have shaken markets globally, with many major indexes experiencing the sharpest decline in years. And with that, it brings us to the end of this World News Bulletin. Thanks so much for being with us.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. In the limelight.
In a statement on the eve of Palestinian Children's Day on Saturday, 5th of April, the resistance movement Hamas says, among the Palestinian children massacred in Gaza, at least 274 were newborn babies, and at least 876 were infants below the age of 1 year old. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. website of Oxfam International has covered the story and tells us more. An Israeli bombardment on Wednesday, 2nd of April, of an UNRWA clinic for displaced people in Jabalia in northern Gaza resulted in the massacring of 19 people, at least 9 of them children. In October of 2023, the United Nations regarded Gaza as a graveyard for children. The death toll at that time was 3,450. Now, according to the official data, the number of children martyred in the Gaza Strip stands at nearly 19,000. The unofficial figure is much higher. In a statement on the eve of Palestinian Children's Day on Saturday, 5th of April, the Hamas movement stated that among the Palestinian children massacred in Gaza, at least 274 were newborn babies, and at least 876 were infants below the age of 1 year old. The resistance group noted over 1,100 children have been abducted in Gaza, and around 39,000 have been orphaned, losing either one or both of their parents. Thousands of others face threats of famine, malnutrition, and disease. After a two-month ceasefire, which was marked by multiple breaches, the child-killing Zionist regime renewed its assault on the Palestinian children in Gaza. The head of the United Nations Agency for Palestinian Refugees, Philip Lazzarini, in a post on X, formerly known as Twitter, warned that the resumption of the war in the Gaza Strip is robbing Palestinian children of their childhood, turning the besieged territory into a no-land for children. The Israeli regime continued its bombardment even on the occasion of Eid al-Fitr, murdering Palestinian children who were excited to celebrate the festival after nearly 2 years of genocide. Videos circulating on social media show lifeless bodies of Palestinian children in new clothes and new shoes. They had anticipated a day of festivity after the culmination of Ramadan, the month of fasting. The UNRWA chief, Philip Lazzarini, wrote, "Harrowing, at least 100 children are reported killed or injured every day in Gaza since the strikes resumed." Lazzarini cited UNICEF figures. He said, "Nothing justifies the massacre of children." Recently, a 350-gigabyte file was released documenting Israel's genocidal crimes in the besieged Gaza Strip. The file contains around 70,000 videos and images of Israel that show the regime targeting children aged between 0 and 9, and also Palestinian women in Gaza. The video footage aligns perfectly with the figures released by the Ministry of Health in Gaza. According to the Palestinian Central Bureau of Statistics statement issued on 3rd of April, at least 17,954 Palestinian children have been massacred in the Israeli attacks on the besieged Gaza Strip, including 274 newborn babies and 876 infants below the age of one. The Palestinian Health Ministry recently released a 1,516-page document listing the names of over 50,000 Palestinians confirmed killed in Gaza since 7th of October 2023. There are a lot of 474 pages listing 15,600-plus children names in the list. On the first 27 pages of the document, the names of children which has been listed are all under 1 year old. At least 274 newborn babies and 876 babies who were not yet old enough to celebrate their first birthday were murdered by the Israeli regime. According to the data provided by Palestinian rights organization, the Israeli regime kills a child in Gaza every 45 minutes. That is an average of 30 children killed every day over the past 545 days. Israel's renewed offensive in the besieged Gaza Strip has resulted in the cold-blooded murder of more than 350 children in less than 2 weeks. According to a UNICEF statement issued on 31st of March, Israel has reportedly left at least 322 children dead and 609 wounded in Gaza over the past 10 days. The United Nations Children's Agency, UNICEF, said in a statement, the figures include children who were reportedly massacred or wounded when the surgical department of Al-Nasser Hospital in southern Gaza was hit in an attack on 23rd of March. UNICEF said most of these children were displaced and sheltering in the makeshift tents or damaged homes. Ending a nearly two-month fragile ceasefire, the Israeli regime resumed its intense bombing of Gaza on 18th of March. The website Palestine Chronicle has also covered the same story. According to the Palestinian Health Ministry, the devastating Israeli airstrike on Gaza in the early hours of 18th of March resulted in the massacring of at least 436 Palestinians, including 183 children and 94 women. Mohammed was one of 183 children martyred in Israel's renewed bombardment of Gaza. His mother was also murdered in the same attack. Alaa Abu Hilal, Muhammad's grief-stricken father, said she was 7 months pregnant when she was martyred. Karam Tafiq Hamid lost his three sons in the Israeli attack on 18th of March. Hassan was 9 years old, Muhammad was 8 years old, and Aziz was just 5 years old. Hamid was quoted as saying, "They used to play around, have fun, and most of all, they loved a ride with me on my tuk-tuk." The devastated father added, like other children, they had dreams. They wanted to become doctors and teachers. Dr. Saqib Rokadia, a British volunteer surgeon at Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis in southern Gaza, said he was shocked to see the number of children being targeted by Israeli soldiers. Dr. Morgan McMonagall, an Irish trauma surgeon who is volunteering at Nasser Hospital in Gaza, estimated that 40% of the dead and injured he saw were children. The United Nations Children and Armed Conflict reports show that the number of Palestinian children killed by Israel's genocidal war in Gaza over the last year is 5 times more than the number of children killed in Gaza between 2005 and 2022 in total. The record number of women and children massacred in Gaza does not include nearly 20,000 people who are either unidentified, missing, or entombed beneath rubble. Last year, a study published in The Lancet estimated the true number of deaths in Gaza could be over 186,000 and may include scores of children. In its statement on 5th of April, the resistance movement Hamas urged the United Nations and world governments to criminalize the occupation of Israel and activate its inclusion on the list of shame for perpetrators of crimes against children. On the eve of Palestinian Children's Day on Saturday, 5th of April, the Palestinian Central Bureau of Statistics reported that 39,384 children in Gaza have lost one or both parents in Israel's genocidal war on the besieged Gaza Strip. According to statistics given by the Bureau, around 17,000 children have been deprived of both of their parents in Israel's genocidal war. In January, the Palestinian Ministry of Health reported that since the start of Israel's war on Gaza, 32,151 children have lost their fathers, and 4,417 children have lost their mothers. However, the figures have increased over the past few months.
first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, أو you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of RIB English Radio, now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sheikh Mahdi Rastani.
Tonight we want to delve into and learn from our first imam what it means to be compassionate, what it means to be kind, and have a master class on the compassion and the mercy of our beloved first imam. There are times in life you plan out everything, and then things don't go as planned. And then when things don't go as planned, there are people who will step up. They will immediately say, yes, I know the food is late here. You can take from our food. I know this didn't work out the way it worked out. You can go and rest in our room. This person who steps forward, huh? This is how Ali was. The narration says the battle of Jamal came to an end. The battle of Jamal was a very lucrative one for Ali, because on the other side, the battlefield happened very quickly. It happened in one day and it was over. And because of that, the money that Talha and Zubair had in Basra and all of that, it immediately came into the hands of Ali. So the narration says he took all of this wealth, he started to divide it amongst the thousands of soldiers that he had. And to each person came 500 dirhams. Yes, 500 dirham. And to himself, 500 dirhams too. Okay, great, so Ali is going to go back home. Now, this is the justice of Ali. We already discussed this last night, yes? This is justice. 500 coins for me and 500 for the rest. This is already groundbreaking if you're the commander and the ruler and all of this kind. But Ali went further. Someone came at the very end. All the division is done. Someone came at the end. He said, Ya Ali, I wanted to make it to the battlefield, but I couldn't. Something came up. Something held me back. I couldn't make it. But all the wealth is already divided. So what did Ali do? Ali said, yes, come and take my 500 dirhams. You go walk away. Now I ask you, when things don't go well in our houses, you go on that vacation, you go on that trip, whatever the case might be, are you the one who steps up? You can have your Dhulfaqar chain and you can have your Dhulfaqar tattoo and you can have your 313 and your bio too. It's all cool and fine. But my question is, when things don't go well, do you stand up first and say, yes, take my food, you can take this, I'll stay up a little bit long. Are you the one who steps ahead? Because that's who Ali was. This is what we have to learn from Ali. The third level of the compassion of Ali is what? When things don't go well, when things don't go as planned, he is the one who steps up. The fourth compassion of Ali, Ali's compassion, the characteristic that it had, was that he would give quickly. Some of us, when we want to give, it takes us years. Let me see if this $5, if I need it, I don't need it. Maybe my grandchild will need it. Maybe I have to put it into an account for the next generation. And Ali used to give quickly. And the narrations tell us, when you want to do good, you have to do it quickly. Now, yes, sometimes there's life-altering decisions and you want to give this huge amount or you want to make a big change in your life. You should take your time to think about these things, yes? But small things here or there, you do it quickly. You don't hold on to it, because the narration says, the more you hold on to it, the more you give shaitan that time to come and talk to you, and all of a sudden the $20 becomes $10 and $5 and it becomes $4.30. So the narration says the Prophet got this wealth from some of the battles. He divided it amongst his people. And to Ali came a small piece of land. So Ali, being the one who he is, the zuhd that he has, he didn't use the land for himself. But then he started to produce wealth through that land. And he started to dig. And they saw Ali is working hard under the sun. Everyone else at home relaxing. And Ali is working hard under the sun. And he's digging. Ya Ali, why are you digging? He's looking for water. Because if you strike water in the land of Arabia, this is a very scarce commodity. And he's digging and he's digging, and all of a sudden struck water. The narration says the water gushed out of the ground. And they called it Yambu' because of how high it gushed out of the ground. And people walked by Ali. And they said, "Ya Ali, congratulations, you struck gold now. You struck water, scarce commodity." And Ali said, "You don't have to congratulate me." He said, "Go and congratulate the one who owns it. فَإِنَّهُ صَدَقَةٌ. I already gave it away." He said, "فَإِنَّهُ صَدَقَةٌ. Ya Ali, congratulations, I already gave it away." And in some narration says, he immediately grabbed a pen and a paper and he wrote that this is for those who are on their way to go and do Hajj, or on their way to go and worship Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. On their way, when they come here, they will benefit from this well, and no one has the right to close off this well forever. This is the concept of waqf. Ali gives quickly. This is number four. Number five, these are levels of the compassion that you and I now may not necessarily experience. But this is because Ali is that North Star. He has to set the standard so that thousands of years later, when I sacrifice for the faith, you sacrifice for the faith, you don't go home saying, "Oh my God, my sacrifice was something else." No, you look at Ali's sacrifice and then you laugh at your own sacrifice. Even if your sacrifice is big in and of itself, huh? Then you laugh at your own sacrifice. What did I do? What did Ali do? This fifth one is when Ali used to give from what he needed himself. This one Ahl Bayt don't necessarily expect from us because they know it's too difficult from us. You can give from extra, that's what Ahl Bayt expect from us. From that which you need, the bare necessities that you have in your own life, Ahl Bayt don't expect us to do this, but this is how they were. They themselves, this is exactly how they were. So the narration says the Prophet called out, maybe in his masjid, this poor person came, said, "I need help." The Prophet sent to his own houses, to the houses of his wives. They all came back, they said, "We have nothing in the house except for water. There's nothing. So we can't help this person." So the Prophet called out, he said, "Man li hadha ar-rajul?" Who's going to help this man? By himself, nobody else is going to help him. So Ali said, "Ana lahu ya Rasulullah, I'll take care of him." So he head home. And on his way home, when he knocked the door and he came to Fatima, salawatullahi wa salamuhu alayha, he said, "Yabnata Rasulullah, O daughter of the Messenger of God, we have someone who's hungry. What do we have in this house?" Fatima said, "Ya Ali, we have nothing in this house. There's no food. Except there's one small meal, and that is for our sabiyya, that is for our little child." And Fatima said, "Walakin nu'thiru dayfana," but we'll figure out something. We'll prefer our guests. We'll figure out something. We'll do something. Ali brought the guests. Ali said, "Fatima, go put the child to bed early tonight. He'll be asleep." And you all know when children sleep, they sleep until the next morning. He said, "Put the child to sleep. And when I come home, turn off all the lights. And I will tell my guest, everyone already done. Everyone is sleeping now. So you eat from this food that you have and then you sleep." And the narration says the next day the Prophet heard about this. He said, "Ali, you're an example of those that the Quran says in Surah Al-Hash, verse 9, وَيُؤْثِرُونَ عَلَىٰ أَنفُسِهِمْ وَلَوْ كَانَ بِهِمْ خَصَاصًا. They give even when they are deeply in need themselves. You and I don't understand this level of compassion. This is the level of compassion you and I maybe may not ever experience in our lives.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karim Adi Alim Halim Hakim Matim. شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمني صل عليه.
Take pieces of bread from me and your soul will never be broken. And if I am your haven, you will never be homeless. One whose cloak is me will never be naked. And one whose resort is me will never be destitute. God is above all powers. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
While the Western media uncritically accepts Israeli regime claims, a UN report found no evidence of Hamas mass rape, but confirmed Israel's systematic sexual violence, a practice dating back to 1948. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, Israeli newspaper Haaretz reported last week that Israeli soldiers sexually abused two Palestinian brothers they had captured and tortured on the streets of the West Bank last January. This is hardly an exceptional occurrence. The UN Independent International Commission of Inquiry on the occupied Palestinian territory, including East Al-Quds and in Israel, has just released a report on systematic Israeli sexual violence against Palestinians in Gaza and the West Bank since October 7, 2023. The chair of the commission asserted that the report entitled More Than a Human Can Bear provides such incontrovertible evidence of Israeli regime crimes that there is no escape from the conclusion that Israel has employed sexual and gender-based violence against Palestinians to terrorize them and perpetuate a system of oppression that undermines their right to self-determination. Yet despite the extensive accounts of Israeli regime rapes and sexual abuse of Palestinians since 1948, the Western media remains filled with the stories of Israeli allegations of Palestinian rapes of Israelis. The Zionist regime army has, in fact, systematically used physical and sexual torture against Palestinians since at least 1967, as human rights groups revealed years ago. How, then, does this reality square with Israeli and Western propaganda? The answer often lies in the foundational anti-Palestinian racism that informs these accounts, which are premised on the understanding that Palestinians, unlike white Europeans, including Israeli Jews, are barbarians. Following October 7, the Israelis swiftly alleged mass Palestinian rape of Israeli Jewish women alongside outright fabrications about the decapitation of babies and their bodies being baked in ovens, pictures of which former President Joe Biden claimed to have seen, an assertion the White House later denied. To date, not one Israeli woman has come forward to allege she was raped on October 7, and despite the existence of hundreds of hours of video footage of the operation, not one video has surfaced. Nevertheless, the United Nations issued a report last year claiming that sexual crimes were committed on that day, despite acknowledging the lack of video evidence and the absence of claimants who came forward to make allegations to the UN mission. While resistance movement Hamas denied that any such rapes had occurred by its fighters, the Zionist regime government's claims remain unverified to this day. The Western media's readiness to adopt unverified Zionist regime claims as factual should be contrasted with its neglect of verified Israeli and UN reports on Israeli sexual assaults and rapes of Palestinians, which are often unreported or underreported in Western press. The anti-Palestinian Israeli historian Benny Morris details many instances of Israeli rapes of Palestinians from 1948 and beyond. Despite this horrific record, which only increased exponentially in the following decades, Israeli perceptions of the war were shaped by widespread racism and a sense of Western superiority over Palestinians. Morris's accounts of rape during the 1948 war are hardly exceptional, as rape remained standard practice for Israeli regime troops against Palestinian refugees expelled by the fabricated regime of Israel during the 1948 war, attempting to return to their homes inside Israel between 1948 and 1955. For example, in August 1949, the Zionist regime troops captured two Palestinian refugees. They killed the man, and 22 troops took turns raping the woman before killing her. In March 1950, the Zionist regime troops abducted two Palestinian girls and one boy from Gaza across the new border. They killed the boy and then raped the two girls before killing them. In August 1950, four Israeli regime policemen raped a Palestinian woman picking fruit from her family's orchard across the West Bank border. After the 1967 occupation, the use of rape and sexual abuse became increasingly systematic. Last year's scandal of the gang rape of Palestinian male hostages in Israeli regime dungeons was merely the latest instance of this ongoing savagery. What the latest UN report demonstrates yet again is that the Zionist regime's sexual crimes against Palestinians of both sexes are not isolated incidents, but part of a systematic strategy to humiliate, abuse, and principally dominate, oppress, and destroy the Palestinian people in whole or in part. Yet, Western and Israeli racism and superiority remain impervious to these facts.
have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
For today, you will listen to the English translation of a part of the text of the message delivered by Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, on the occasion of Nowruz, the start of the Iranian New Year on March 20th, 2025. First, in the face of an event like the loss of the president, the massive turnout of the people for his funeral procession, the slogans they chanted, and the high morale they exhibited showed that although this was a serious tragedy, it wasn't able to make the Iranian people feel weakened. Furthermore, they were able to promptly hold elections. We must thank God for this. Moreover, during the recent events of the past months, when many of our brothers in Lebanon, our brothers in religion, and our Lebanese brothers faced difficulties, the Iranian nation gave its support with open hearts. This event that took place in this regard, that is, the overwhelming flood of aid from the people for their Lebanese and Palestinian brothers, stands as one of the enduring, unforgettable events in our country's history. The gold that the Iranian women and ladies generously parted with and contributed to this cause, and the assistance given by our people and our men, are matters of great significance. They reflect the strength of the nation's wills and its unwavering resolve. This spirit, this warmth, this readiness, and this spiritual strength are assets for the future of the country and for the enduring life of our dear Iran. These sets God willing, will be used to the fullest by the country, and may Almighty God continue to bestow His blessings upon the nation. Last year, we introduced the slogan, Surge in the Production Through People's Participation, which was essential for the country, and in a sense, it was vital. However, the various events that unfolded in the year 1403 prevented this slogan from being fully realized. Of course, significant efforts were made by both the government and the people, as well as by the private sector, investors, and entrepreneurs. They were able to accomplish good things. However, the work that was done fell short of expectations. So this year, too, our main issue remains the economy. Thus, my expectations from our esteemed government, respected officials, and our dear people once again centers around economic issues.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Supplication on Wednesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah who appointed the night to be a garment, and sleep for a rest, and day He appointed for a rising. To Thee belongs praise, for Thou roused me from my sleep. And hadst Thou willed, Thou wouldst have made it everlasting, an everlasting praise that will never be cut off, and whose number the creatures will never count. O Allah, to Thee belongs praise, for Thou created, then proportioned, and ordained and decreed, and gave death and bestowed life. And